Richard Skipper celebrates. Every show is a celebration. Each show, Richard delivers the artists you love, showcasing what makes them unique. Never gossipy. The antidote to a sometimes hectic world. Now, here's your host, Richard Skipper.
Happy Friday, everyone, and welcome to a very special edition of Richard Skipper Celebrates. For those of you who are here for the first time, welcome. My show is about celebrating artists and their body of worth. And we're going to be celebrating two artists this evening. The first is Joyce Bulifant, and then her fond memories of Helen Hayes. I live here in Rockland County. I live in Piermont, just below Nyack. And I moved here in 1990. And Helen Hayes was very much a fixture of our wonderful community at that time. You would see her on a Sunday afternoon walking through the streets of Nyack, and she would be talking to the children, and she would actually invite all the children in town to come and swim in her swimming pool at Pretty Penny. We'll talk about that in a few moments. But we're going to be listening and hearing about Joyce Bulifant's memories today. I am a huge fan of Joyce Bulifant. And the first time that I met Joyce was a few years ago when I was in Palm Springs. And I was so thrilled when we ended up having lunch together. And then when her book came out, My Four Hollywood Husbands, and no, I'm not one of them. I was lucky enough to interview her at the Drama Bookshop. And I am so thrilled that she said yes to being here with me this evening. Joyce, first of all, before we begin, I want to ask, how are you doing really in the midst of this crazy world we're in?
Oh, boy. I am so blessed. I mean, every day I'm thankful I have food on the table and a roof over my head, and I worry so about those who are struggling. I really do, and I just feel grateful and want to do anything I can to make the world better.
Now, you did something in the midst of a pandemic that I can't even fathom doing, and you moved. Where did you move to?
I moved from the valley, from Indian Wells, California, up in the mountains to Glenwood Springs, which is down valley and less expensive than Aspen, about 45 minutes. And I live up on a mountaintop in a very rustic little home that looks out over a mountain range. Mm-hmm. And it is so beautiful. I have to send you pictures.
Oh, I'd love. But I have to ask you, why did you make the decision to move from Palm Springs?
Well, it's funny. I've never been a desert person, although I have the most dear, wonderful friends here in the desert. And but I have Mary and Charlie, my two eldest children, are up there. And I have grandchildren up there. And I have a lot of grandchildren in L.A., too, and one in Chicago. But I wanted to be more with nature, with the seasons, because I grew up back east.
Yes.
So I think I just needed that. I mean, for instance, one morning I'm sitting in the living room with the fireplace on and huge snowdrops are falling. And there's a deer on my patio, but not 4 feet away from me, licking the snowflakes.
The snowflakes.
It's like living in a Disney movie.
Well, we have those deer here in Nyack and Piermont as well.
Yes.
I want to begin. We're going to tell your story a little bit as well, getting to Miss Hayes. You have a one-woman show celebrating your remembrances of her. But I want to go back to the five-year-old Joyce Bulifant. That's the age that I believe before people have been encumbered with the pressures of school, the people that come into our lives. What was your life like as a five-year-old little girl?
Oh, that's such an interesting question. My father worked in the shipyard, and so we seemed to move a lot, even when I was a little girl. And at five, my memories are being in Wilmington, North Carolina. And
were you living there at the time?
Yes.
Well, you know, I'm originally from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, so we're going to
I spent a lot of time there.
We're going to have these crisscrossing moments tonight.
Yes, I learned how to whistle in one of those, were they called a rumble seat, the back seat that opened up in the car. I remember learning to whistle. I had my tonsils out. I had a neighbor who cut my hair off and gave me a perm, and my mother was furious. I remember building a snowman and seeing snow for the first time with my daddy. I remember a Halloween party my mother had. And I remember I was not allowed to step off the curb from our block. And all my friends were older. And I would walk to the curb and wave goodbye when they went to school. But one day, my mother went to a bridge party and I went to school. And she came back, didn't know where I was, but the housekeeper didn't know where I was. And I was sitting sharing a peanut butter and jelly sandwich in school. I'm amazed that the teachers didn't call and say, who's this little girl in my classroom? But I remember I was out in the play yard. And maybe they did call, and I don't know that part. Mm-hmm. And I was going up in a swing, and all of a sudden, I think the swing may have just stopped in midair because I saw my mother getting out of the car in a funny hat with a big feather waving in it and coming at me like this with these other women behind her and grabbing me off the swing. And it's the only time I ever got a spanking. And I'll never forget it. I never ran away to school again. I tried to run away from school.
Well, I want to ask you, did you grow up in a household where the arts were the exception or the rule?
They were the exception because I was in an orphanage at an age about seven, and then I was in foster care, and I kind of made up my own plays and singing and to entertain all the other little smaller children than I.
And what was the pivotal moment that you believe was that moment where the light bulb went off and you thought, I want to be on stage?
I think in third grade, I got to live with my mother and there was an orphanage nearby. And I used to take over my comic books and chewing gum to them, bubble gum. And they'd sort of say, thanks, you know. And I thought, and I was going to the movies, and I thought, boy, if I was Margaret O'Brien or Shirley Temple or somebody like that, and I went to give them comic books and bubble gum, then they'd really like it. Isn't that weird?
No, I think it's wonderful.
And I thought, I want to learn how to do that. I can, and I had entertained the little children and made up stories before because I couldn't read till very late because I'm dyslexic. And so I made everything up. And I thought if I could do that, I mean, when I go to the movies, it just made me feel so good and so happy. And I wanted to be a good little girl and eat spinach like Margaret O'Brien and all those things.
Well, I love the stories that you tell in your book. You know, I had a mentor in my hometown, and she had a very dear friend, which I'm going to bring up in a moment, who used to come and visit her all the time. And you had the experience, some hilarious moments with this man, Edward Everett Horton.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Do you want to hear those stories?
Of course. I'd love for everyone. No, we want people to buy your book, but I want people to hear these stories.
Well, I was in summer stock when I was 14. I started going away and painting sets and sweeping the stage and doing everything and playing maids. And Everett Horton was doing, it had to have been a comedy, but there was one very serious moment. And I was the maid. And he asked me, I would go to the theater early, sweep the stage and get everything ready and check the props. And I had to, at the end of the second act, there was a toast that everyone made. And Mr. Horton said to me, Joyce, you know, could you please put that the thing, the mixture for the wine, put it in the refrigerator because I'm swallowing flies and everything. You come, you leave it out, the flies get in there. Oh, yes, of course, Mr. Horton. So it was Sunday matinee, and I was ready to get the food coloring to put the red food coloring in for the wine, and it was totally empty. And I just panicked. I didn't know what to do. I went out to the prop shop and climbing around, and a thing of grape Jell-O hit me in the head. And I thought, perfect. I didn't know about white wine. I was only 14. So I'm taking pinches of the Jell-O and put it in each wine glass, put it in the refrigerator. And then I came on as the maid. And I had the tray with all the wine glasses. And each of the gentlemen took a wine glass, and Everett Horton said, I'd like to make a toast to blah, blah, blah. And they all went like this, and this glob of Jell-O hit him. And you know what he did? He tied me to the tree out front with a rope to teach me a lesson.
Well, he wouldn't get away with that today. But also, when you, at the same time, 14 years old, you met a young boy, which brings us to a lot of our story tonight, James MacArthur.
Yes. That was, he came, I was in a boarding school, co-ed boarding school, but the boys' campus was a mile away from the girls, but we had classes together. And he was there, and there was a lady coming. Somebody said she was an actress. And I didn't know much about theater at all. I was all about movies. Mm-hmm. And they said that his mother was an actress and she was coming to school. And I was in the drama club. I was invited to sit next to her. And I expected someone to come in furs and dark glasses, rhinestones and all that. And in came this rather mousy mother looking person. I said, that's an actress. Anyway, she sat next to me. And I don't remember very much. She was just very ordinary, very nice. And Jimmy was terrible. Oh, he was so naughty in school. And we didn't get along.
You say in the book, that's what I was about to say. You say in the book that at first you two didn't get along.
Not at all. He was just awful. And besides, I was dating an upperclassman 2 years ahead of me. So he was just he was terrible. Mm-hmm. He put glue on the teacher's seat and made us all sign an apology, but not his name. You know, he was very naughty. But then the upperclassman broke up with me when I was a sophomore and he was a senior. And I was at a picnic one day and Jimmy was waving at me across the way. And I thought, I looked around. I was sure he wasn't waving to me, but he was. And he came up and he said, listen, I'm real sorry about you and Mike. Huh? You want to go to the movies tonight? And that was the beginning of, my gosh, an incredible lifetime, an unbelievable lifetime together. And
but he invited you not long after that to come to NIAC, to visit his parents.
Yes, I was 16 years old, and by then I had learned a little bit more about theater because we were in a theatrical community, mm-hmm. the school was, which was wonderful, in New Hope, Pennsylvania.
Yes.
And so I knew that she was supposed to be a pretty famous lady, and I was really nervous. I mean, all of a sudden I arrived at this. Well, you've probably seen it, the beautiful Victorian house.
I'm going to share. Here is the house. Yes. This, of course, was the famous painting taken by, that was Edward Hopper. And here is a photograph of the house. Yes. So, I mean, your memories and the description of you walking into this house for the first time, and you capture so vividly what the house looked like, everything that was going on. And again, because you're going to the home of famous parents, you have an expectation that's not exactly there.
No, not at all. I mean, they were the most down-to-earth people I ever met, especially Helen. She was making a bed when I was introduced
Love this image. You say she's wearing a babushka. She comes down.
And she said, oh, hello, darling. We're going to have strawberry shortcake for dinner. I hope you like that. Well, it only happened to be my most favorite dessert in the whole wide world. So there was immediate bonding. Immediate. And, you know, I just quickly, it's in the play I do about her. But at her, at Mary's engagement party in Nyack, Mary's stepmother did the menu, I thought, and dessert came, and it was strawberry shortcake. And I said, HB, did you order the strawberry shortcake? And she said, no, they decided. And I said, no, they didn't decide. I knew it was a message.
It was a message. But I love when you sat down with Charles MacArthur and you told him that you wanted to be an actress and what he said to you.
You have to be in 40 flops.
40 flops. And you wondered, you know, did Miss Hayes do any flops? I was lucky enough to meet Helen Hayes as well. And I did a reading with her at St. Malachy's Church many, many years ago. She was the most incredible, wonderful, loving person. When she spoke to you, she looked right into your eyes. You felt as if you were lifelong friends. You and her, you bonded immediately with her. And when I want to move a little further in your relationship, but when you came to her and said that you were going to marry James, she had some advice for you.
You know, I had the hardest time putting that in the book. And it wasn't until I was doing the play, Remembering Helen Hayes with Love, and I was working on the book. And I was at that part in the book, and I said to the editor, you know, I don't say that in the play. And she said, what? She said, that's so important. I said, but it makes her sound so terrible. And she said, but that's very important. And it was that day, I mean, and this was just, what, 3 or 4 years ago when I did the play the first time, I went through all these different times when Jim and I were dating and going and engaged and everything, of these awful things she said to me about Jimmy. And it wasn't until that moment sitting with the editor that I put it all together like a puzzle and realized she was trying to save me from the kind of marriage she had had with Jimmy's father. Because Jimmy was an alcoholic and Charlie MacArthur, his father, was an alcoholic. And I think she was just looking out for me because we were so close, Richard. When we traveled to Europe, when she took me to Europe to see Jimmy, who was doing Third Man on the Mountain, we just were so close. She'd introduce me and she'd say, this is my daughter, Mary. And then she'd say, oh, I'm sorry, but I think of you like that, you know? And when Jim and I, when I had to get divorced because of the drinking, it really hurt her. And in the play, that's a very big part. And the letters that she wrote to me and the ups and downs of the relationship after the divorce. And then there was a time, I don't remember now if I wrote about this in the book, but when we came back from that trip to Europe to see Jimmy, and Jimmy said, we were going to wait 5 years to get married because he was in school at Harvard. He was a junior. And we went up to a mountaintop one day and he said, I've decided I don't want to go back to college. I want to continue with my career. And I don't want for us to wait to get married. Will you marry me?
That's in the book. Yes, it is in the book.
When I come home. So then we had that crossing on the Giulia Cesare, the ship crossing with Helen back to New York. And when we said goodbye at the ship, and I don't know if this is in the book, it might be, there was a sad, oh my gosh, our relationship is going to change. It's going to shift. And I got a feeling from her, it was don't leave. Don't go into that life. There was something going on with both of us feeling that this special closeness that we had was going to change.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, you were very young at the time that you got married.
Yes.
I grew up in an alcoholic household. And so I know that world all too well. But had you had any exposure? I mean, did you have a real strong sense of how deep his drinking was in the courting phase of your relationship?
I did have a sense of it, but I felt, this is my problem.
I know what you're going to say. I know exactly what you're going to say.
I can fix it.
Yes.
I'll love him. I will love him so hard that he won't want to drink. He won't need to drink. It shows you how little I knew about the disease of alcoholism. Because I kept doing it.
I know. Well, all of us that have gone through that, we know, we believe we can fix it. We can make it better. If we try harder and to be the best we that we can possibly be, we'll be able to fix it.
And it's exhausting, isn't it?
It's exhausting. But this relationship is so beautiful between you and Helen Hayes. I'm glad that you've put this into a play. But before we get to that, I want to know what your process was in terms of writing your book. When you talked earlier about the fact that you waffled back and forth as to whether or not you should put certain aspects in your book, how do you decide when you're writing a memoir of what will go in and what will not go in?
Boy, that's an interesting question. I just kind of, well, the first, it took 24 years to write it. I'm a little slow.
Well, you had to go through four husbands to write it.
It's so embarrassing.
No, I love it. It's a great book. Okay. I loved it the first time and I read it again and in preparation for this. It's a great book.
Was helping people. That's the real reason. But when I started writing it, it was called Home Sweet Home, Where Is It? Because I've lived in probably now 75 homes.
Mm-hmm.
And home is very important to me. And so I was going to write about the home, what it looked like, the experiences in that home, moving to the next home, blah, 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 blah. And of course, a little bit of Jimmy was in it because he was in my first home, mm-hmm. and Helen. But then there was more. And then a friend, Bruce Cook, who's a wonderful writer, producer person, he called me one day and he said, Joyce, I have the title for your book. And I said, what? He said, My Four Hollywood Husbands. I said, Bruce, that is disgusting. Embarrassing, disgusting, and terrible. I would never, ever title my book that. And about 2 weeks later, I thought, yeah, but it might sell books. But then my whole focus changed. And I thought, I need to talk about alcoholism. If I'm going to talk about my four Hollywood husbands, all of whom were alcoholics, I have to try to have a message that will help people and that you can get through it, that you can leave and you can go on and you can learn and you will make mistakes and you do need to get help. And, so I thought, well, I started all over again. And I was married to Roger Perry, the love of my life, who was an alcoholic, but he had not had a drink for 24 years when he passed away.
Yeah.
And the marriage wouldn't have worked if he was still drinking, because by that husband, I had learned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I got help. But so then I started writing, and it was, what made me happy is that I would give it to Roger. I'd write a chapter, give it to him, and I'm terrible being dyslexic with spelling, and lots of times with I do my thoughts backwards, and he would go over it and correct it and give it back to me. So really, for the last year or two of his life, he got to read over and over again how much I loved him and respected him. But the whole point of the book is the effect that alcoholism has on a relationship and on children. And I think my big focus mm-hmm. was to say to people who are in an abusive alcoholic relationship and you have children, I'll say what the MacArthur doctor said to me: if you want to stay in the relationship and be a martyr, that's up to you, but you have children and you have to protect them. And that was all I needed to hear. I knew what I had to do.
So, and thank you for sharing that with us. And in terms of writing out of all the aspects of your life, and of course, I have a love for Helen Hayes. And we're going to talk a little bit later about some work that we think we can have happen here in NIAC.
I would love that.
Yes, we're going to talk about that a little later. But out of all the aspects of your life, and obviously, Ms. Hayes made such an impact on your life. What are some of the big lessons that you learned from her that helped you both as an actress and as a human being?
Oh, boy. I think first let's take the actress one. She never gave advice acting wise, and I never asked for it except one time. My senior play at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, I did a play called Hatful of Rain. It was very serious, and I'd been given all comedies to do. And her one note was, no matter how serious things are, don't forget the funny bone. And that was one title I was going to use for the book at one point, mm-hmm. Don't Forget the Funny Bone. I just thought that's not only an acting lesson, that's a life lesson. We've got to look at the funny side of seriousness. There's always something funny to find. And certainly when you have to think about, you've got to be able to have a sense of humor about yourself. You know, that's very important. And she was very good about that. And she told very naughty jokes. And I love that. And I could go tit for tat on that with her.
Oh, that's good. We'll share some of those after the show.
Right.
But I want to ask you, with all the experiences that you had with her, that you're now putting this, you already have, put this in a one-woman show. Well, before I get there, I want to go back to the book for a moment. When did you know that the book was ready for the reader?
Oh, well, after I had an editor here in the desert, it was 750 pages. And she edited out big chunks. And then I learned how to edit. Is this story really going to move the book forward? Is this really going to be interesting? What I have now is another book because it's, I think the book is 275 or 95 pages.
Now, was it an easy process for you to be able to relinquish those aspects of your life?
Oh my God, it was like cutting off an arm. But I did it because I thought she was right. And I got so that I could then, once I saw the process, I could go in and cut chunks out.
And what was your process? Did you do it in longhand? Did you type it? How?
24 years ago, when I first, when Bill Asher and I, husband number three, so embarrassing.
No, it's not. It's life. We go through it.
Oh, boy. When we separated, I moved to Colorado to be near the children and to be away from him, because I felt if I was near him, I would keep enabling the drinking and everything. So I moved away. I didn't want to get divorced. We were separated. And I thought, what the heck am I going to do up here in the mountains? So I thought, I'm going to write about the houses and the experiences, and it'll be good for me to do, to get it out. So I had my Lance nighty, flannel nighty. I go downstairs, make a pot of tea, bring it upstairs, put it next to the bed, had a yellow legal pad, and I wrote in longhand. And that would be the first draft. The second draft would be correcting all the things that needed to go first instead of second. And then I talked it into a tape, and that would be another draft, because I would change things as I spoke. And then I'd take it to be typed up. And then when it came back typed up, I would do another draft. I'd correct that and take that out. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the final thing was to do the whole rewrite, gearing it towards alcoholism and marriage and children and mm-hmm. career. And Rogers and my love story is woven throughout the book.
And what surprised you the most about yourself from sitting down and putting your life on paper?
That I was able to do it, that I was disciplined enough to do it. I couldn't believe it. But you know what? I'd sit down to write, and Roger would come in after 8 hours and say, you have not stood up. You've not had anything to eat or drink. You've got to stop. And I mean, it just pours out of me when I decide to write. It just blah.
And now this one-woman show, let's talk about the impetus of that show. What was the deciding factor in which you wanted to tell your story and your relationship with Helen Hayes?
I think it was such a unique relationship. Maybe it isn't, but I think of it as being that. I don't want people to ever forget her. And there are young people today who don't have any idea who Helen Hayes was. And I just, I thought it was an interesting enough story of a young actress and an older actress and their close relationship and what they went through. And I just thought it would be interesting to do.
And with everything that you've learned about her, what aspects of her do you feel that are coming through your acting now?
Oh, that's interesting. You know why that's really interesting? Last night, I did a Zoom reading for CV Rep, which is a theater here in the desert. And it's called The Last Act is Solo. And it's about an 85-year-old actress who is dealing with dementia. Mm-hmm. And it's a three-character play. And it's very serious. Yet I found the funny bone in places.
That's good.
And I used Helen as my as the character. I mean, I was able to pull out a lot of her when she was theatrical, and she could be theatrical. So I used a lot of that, and a lot of what I've been through too. I mean, it's funny. In the play, she talks about entertaining on ships, which I've done, and there was a lot to pull on, to experiences to use. And I just got off the phone with Gavin McLeod, who played my husband, or I played his wife in the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
I want to say something about this, because in my research today, this very unique trivia thing came across. You played Jill Whalen's mom in Airplane. He played Jill Whalen's father on The Love Boat.
Right.
And you two played husband and wife on The Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Right.
Have you ever thought about that before?
I have, quite often. So is Jill.
it was just something that popped into my head today as I was doing my research.
Well, Gavin just was over the moon about the performance because people have never seen me do anything serious. And this is a very serious piece. And it was a reading, but I read it every night out loud for 4 weeks at least. And it was so hard to do because you don't want to look at words. You want to internalize the whole thing. But there was so much to draw on. But my gosh, I'm going to blow my own horn. I have been getting so rave comments.
I'm thrilled. That's great.
But, you know, people forget that, you know, drama's easy, comedy's hard. They keep forgetting that.
Now, I mentioned earlier, you know, I got a message today from Leslie M. Warren, and you and Leslie M. Warren and John Davidson, who I interviewed a few weeks ago, were all in The Happiest Millionaire together and starting out in your careers. And you, of course, have this incredible quality that we have seen on game shows, on the comedies that you've done and everything. Do you think that you have not been given the opportunity to get those opportunities to show?
Absolutely. And it really pisses me off.
You can say it, put it out there.
It does.
Are there any particular roles that you would have loved or still would love to do that are of the dramatic vein?
The Glass Menagerie. I would love to do that.
Okay. Anyone who's out there listening, maybe when COVID is over, we will get you to NIAC. And we will do a benefit of you starring in The Glass Menagerie.
Well, I want to do, but Richard, I want to do Remembering Helen Hayes with Love in the NIAC Theater.
Well, you know, the NIAC Theater doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, well.
Helen Hayes Theater.
But I'd like to do it as a benefit for the hospital, for the Helen Hayes Hospital. It's the Mary MacArthur Hospital.
Well, I will tell you this. I have done a lot of performing in the atrium of the Helen Hayes Hospital. They have a wonderful space there. I think would be a great opportunity to do your show there. We're going to make it happen. Let's talk about our mutual friend, Joel Vig.
Oh, my gosh. I adore that man.
So do I. And he's performing tonight.
I know. He's being Tennessee Williams, right?
Brilliant, yes, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant actor, raconteur, funny man. We talked for hours on the phone, but he has been relentless to get Pretty Penny, which was the home of the MacArthurs, literary landmark status. Can you talk a little bit about that from your knowledge of what he's trying to get done?
Well, I know he's trying to get the library there to make it a literary landmark, you know, and my gosh, with Helen there, she's written several books, and I'm in a lot of them. and Charlie MacArthur, famous playwright. I mean, what could be better? It'd be wonderful on that brick wall out there to put a brass plaque and say that that was their home. And I just think it'd be great. And if we could do the benefit at the same time, I mean, it'd just be great. It should happen. And Joel's been really pushing it. He is the sweetest fellow. He came to see me the first time I did Remembering Helen Hayes and brought me a Schraff candy, old tin candy box that Helen had given him. It was so sweet. He's a wonderful man. And he also... My husband Roger and I wrote a musical about the Hotel Colorado, and we did that to raise money for a center for abused children. And Joel played Roosevelt, President Roosevelt, because that used to be his hangout at the hotel. And he was brilliant. Oh, he's so good.
Anything else? I'm on board with anything I can do to get you back to NIAC. And when was the last time that you were in NIAC?
It was for Jimmy's funeral. And sadly, Jimmy's son, his youngest son, Jamie, passed away recently.
Yes, I heard. And I'm so sorry about that.
It's really affected my two children terribly. I mean, they're very, very sad. As a matter of fact, the memorial is Sunday.
I'm assuming that it's a Zoom memorial.
No.
Oh, they're doing it in person?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And where will the memorial be?
It's at the Presbyterian Church in the desert.
Okay.
Well, so I think they're limiting the number of people.
Well, I'm very sorry about that. When was the last time that you saw Helen Hayes? What were your final memories with her?
I think about it so often. It was a snowy day. It was February or March, because she passed away on St. Patrick's Day, very appropriately. Yeah. She knew how to do it. I went upstairs to her bedroom, and it was Easter time was coming, and she used to collect eggs. And I thought, what can I take her as a little gift? She loved candies and things. So I found candy Easter eggs, and I found one of those wonderful eggs that you look through and there's a seam. Mm-hmm. And she was sitting by her window in the bedroom. The nurse let me in, and her white hair, and she had a black dressing gown on, and it was snowing out the window. And I just held her hand and talked to her, and when she opened her present, she said, "You always know, don't you?" And when it was time to leave, I gave her a kiss, and she said, "Don't leave, please don't leave." And I just held her hand, and I said, "It's time for you to rest." And I turned to leave, and I looked back at her, and she just smiled at me. I was just,
What a beautiful story. I want to ask you, in addition to Helen Hayes, who do you consider the main mentors in your life who helped you along the way in your career?
I have not had anybody that really helped me in that sense at all. But I had incredible women who were friends, and Lillian Gish, mm-hmm. and Elsa Lanchester, and Helen. And they each brought, well, I remember Elsa would come down to what was called the schoolroom, they called in her house, and Ray Henderson, who was her accompanist for shows that she did, was working with me. I never had voice lessons. Doggone it. I really wish I had singing lessons. But people were always afraid that it would change my voice, and they didn't want that to happen. But I could have learned so much technically about singing and be able to sing better. But anyway, Elsa would come down and watch me do something, and then she'd do a number. And we'd have tea in the kitchen of her house in Hollywood. And then Lillian, I go to see, she was Helen's best friend, and she was Jimmy's godmother. She's my Charlie's godmother, and she was my fairy godmother. She was always by my side, even when Helen would be upset. She'd say, "Oh, darling, don't mind her when she gets angry. It's just the Irish in her."
Well, I want to talk about a few people that are by your side. We've got a few comments here. Tell Joyce her godson, Eric Lieberman, loves her. And you, Richard. So, and that's wonderful. There are things here. I don't know who some of these people are. Let's see what a great play that is. I guess talking about remembering Helen Hayes. There's a comment here from someone who calls himself Music Lover, says, "You were wonderful last night, Joyce. It was special to see you and your son, John, act together."
That's really nice.
And then Claire Sheridan says, "Bring it to Rockland." So we're going to get you back to Rockland County. I want to talk a moment. A lot of people know you also from the whole game show circuit. And when you and I, sat and talked at the Drama Bookshop when your book came out, and you talked that evening about the game shows. You were so wonderful. Match Game, we can't think of Match Game without you. But you shared something with me that night. I hope you don't mind me bringing this up, because you've done so much work for dyslexia. And many people, you talk about it, you put it out in the open, and you're still very actively involved. Can you take us back to, there was a time where we didn't have a name for it. And I mean, when you first discovered that you had dyslexia and there was actually a name to go with it, can you take us back to that?
Yes, it happened. Well, I was worried about my son, John, my youngest son, and he was having terrible problems in school and we couldn't figure out what was going on. And finally we found a school that was, he had testing and they said he was dyslexic. And he's just brilliant mind and creative. But boy, it was hard for him to read. And now he's a wonderful actor, writer, director. But it was through the headmaster in his special school. I was sitting across from the desk from him one day, and he said, Joyce, did you have problems in school? And I said, me? Yes. And he said, really? And I said, yes, I did. I remember wanting to go to this boarding school where I met Jimmy. And my mother took me to have a meeting with the headmaster. And the headmaster said, and what books do you read? I couldn't read. But I did, in fourth grade, a teacher read a Nancy Drew mystery. Mm-hmm. I thought I'd died and gone to heaven. I thought, I mean, you can get a story out of a book like that? My gosh, that's fantastic. And so I said, Nancy Drew mysteries. That's what I read. Being the actress I was at that age. And my mother kicked my chair and she said, you read that trash? And I wanted to say, I don't know how to read. But I couldn't. I was too embarrassed. But they found out soon enough in school. And I was so lucky because it was a small boarding school. Mm-hmm. And there were only no more than 8 students in a class. So there were several other children that were having trouble reading, and they put us all in one class, and the football coach used to read stories to us. And I just thought that was wonderful. And then I wanted to do a play, but I couldn't read the lines. So I went to one of the teachers at night and said, could you help me do this? And I memorized it and I got the part. But it was really hard till I learned. I mean, I still have trouble. I mix up words. I know one word at the beginning of a paragraph, and I see it in the middle of the paragraph. I don't know it. And I am going to do, I think it's April 20, I forgot, 18th or something. I'm going to show a film for the center that I helped found for abused children, the Riverbridge Regional Center. And, you know, at report card time, a lot of children are abused emotionally and physically because their parents don't understand why they think they're not trying. Mm-hmm. They don't understand that they do really well in history, terribly in math, that it's all over the place. And it's to kind of help with that, with the abuse part. But it was such a relief to find out there was a name. And I also, that was my problem.
Well, God bless you for putting a name, I mean, putting your face on this and instead of hiding it. A lot of people still to this day will hide that aspect. And it's such a stigma that so many people, we'll be honest with you. I didn't know a lot about dyslexia until you and I talked the first time we met and you were telling me about the work that you were doing. I had heard the word. I knew people, even as an adult, I didn't know a lot about it. And it's still one of those aspects of, you know, our lives that people do want to put on a back burner and not address front and center. And so God bless you. Not only, and I've never even thought about the fact that children are abused around report card time because of this. And, you know, it's just something that, and God, and if people want to get involved with your center, how can they get involved, contribute, find out about what you're doing?
Oh, that's so nice. It's the River Bridge Regional Center. It's in Glenwood Springs, Colorado. And then there's the Dyslexia Foundation, if you just go online and look up that. But the Center for Abused Children, I'm very involved with. And I would say next to my three children and grandchildren, that's what I'm most proud of in my life, is that it took Roger and I did every two-character play you can think of. And then finally, when we ran out of plays, we wrote one. And I remember Helen Hayes was part of raising money for the center, too.
And, I mean, do you enjoy writing? Is it very cathartic for you now that you have a book and a one-woman show? What's next for you?
I'm working on another book, but I've been very slow about it because it's been very emotional. And it's, the title is I Loved Him to Death. And it's about helping someone that you love do their transition to the next life. And things that might be helpful, I hope. I don't see much point in writing a book unless there's something that might help somebody.
Well, I love these life lessons that you share with some. You know, in our final moments, I want to ask you, we've been through a lot in the past year on many levels. How has the past year shaped you? I know that you've moved and that's happened. We talked about that earlier. But what do you think is the biggest impact beyond the obvious that the past year has had on your life? And what has made you stronger coming through the past year?
Well, that's such deep questions, Richard.
I want to end on a deep note.
Right. I think I've learned to not cram so much into one day, that it was really nice to have space to, I was also very fortunate that my son, John, my youngest son, came to live with me for that year. Mm-hmm. And I learned things about him that I had no idea, I mean, about him. He loves to cook. He's a gourmet chef. He can do electrical things. He can fix everything and put things together. I had no idea. But for me, it's about learning to slow down a little bit more, that I need to do that. Mm-hmm. And because I remember, I looked back in my February date book before the March thing hit.
March 12th, everything shut down.
Right. And I had 3 and 4 things crammed in to do every day. And I remember one day I didn't have anything. I thought, I'm staying in my pajamas all day. I'm not doing anything. I love this. And I sat there and the phone rang and said, Joyce, where are you? We're all waiting for you in the ballroom. And I went,
you should have gone with your pajamas on.
I should have.
You know, you bring up a very interesting point, and I'm going to share this with everyone. It's called the white space. Celebrate the white space on your calendars, everyone. You don't have to cram every moment with everything. I think of this past year as a pause. I think it's a time for us to pause and think about what we love that's in our lives, what is not here that we miss, and what we don't want in our lives anymore. And we can, you know, focus on those things as well. Joyce, every time I sit down and chat with you, it's a true pleasure. So I want to thank you for being here tonight. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. If you all enjoyed the show, and I hope you did, please, 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 I can't stress this enough, leave a comment on whatever platform it is that you're either listening to or watching this on. If you're on YouTube, please leave a comment there. If you're listening to the podcast, leave a comment there. That helps in terms of the visibility of each of these interviews. My goal is to celebrate, and I hope I did that tonight. I also want to let everyone know that tomorrow afternoon at 5 o'clock, I'm going to be celebrating Penny Fuller, one of my favorite actresses. So I'm very excited about sitting down and chatting with her tomorrow. I also, end every show by telling everyone to go out and do something nice for somebody else without expecting anything in return. So tonight, I want you to go to Amazon or your favorite bookseller, and I want you to order 2 copies of My Four Hollywood Husbands. Keep one for yourself, and then send one to the 8th friend that pops up on your friends list on Facebook. And let them know what they mean to you in your life. It's a great book. There are a lot of life lessons here. And thank you for sharing this with us. And I want to give you the final word tonight. Anything that you want to say about anything that we talked about that you want to expound upon, anything that we didn't talk about that you wish we had, or just any message that you want to put out to everyone who's watching right now. And Joyce, I celebrate you every day. Thank you.
Oh, Richard, thank you. First, thank you so much for doing this show and inviting people and celebrating actors and others. I really appreciate that. And I think we just all need to celebrate each other. We need to respect each other, and we need to be tolerant of others, even if they don't think the way we do.
Amen. Thank you. And good night. Make it a better tomorrow, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.